DJ Caillou on the track.
UAS got the hottest sounds on the streets.
Welcome, 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 everybody. Welcome to the Next Play Show. I'm your host, Carlos McMath. Our co-host, Mr. Lamont Willie, is out. So I'm doing the show solo dolo. I mean, peace and blessings to everyone out there. You know, we got opportunity to get in today and get a chance to talk and hopefully get a chance to exchange back and forth with these topics that we'll cover today. You know, more importantly, some of the things we'll cover today is I kind of want to talk about the situation with College Debate, with Morehouse leaving the debate tournament, following some anti-black mockery. Also, I kind of want to get into the situation of just talking about, you know, not only just, you know, growth. We here at the Next Play Show, we always talk about growth and try to give you different type of nuggets and information that you can use on a day in and day out basis. But then also, I kind of want to talk about the way in which our plans normally happen and come about and what we can do to make sure that we execute them more effectively. But, you know, I like to start off first, man, just kind of give you all the update. You know, it's been a great week. You know, we had a good time. I had some positive things that occurred, and hopefully the same are all out to you. You know, peace and blessings to you and your family and your friends. But, you know, I got a chance being a collegiate coach, had opportunity to get back out there on the trail this weekend and go recruit a couple AAU tournaments, travel ball tournaments. And you know, it's a little different. It's a little different from back when I played and even different from when I began, you know, coaching and starting recruiting. And I think sometimes when people are out there, and again, you know, for our listeners, listen, give us a call, and I want you all to be a part of this conversation. But even if you're not really well-versed when it comes to AAU basketball, when it comes to travel basketball, whatever, it's no different than any other profession, right? And so the whole purpose behind AAU travel basketball essentially is exposure. And as a collegiate coach, as a recruiting coordinator, one of the biggest things I want to do is we kind of evaluate the players and things that they're doing on the court. So it's not just talent. It's out of way to conduct themselves as well. But you will be surprised how much we value the company these players keep. And in particular, I don't want to say we, because I know there are a lot like-minded college coaches like myself, but at the same time, there's some that differ. And so I can only give you from my perspective. I've been coaching basketball for 15 years and you know, just got a not 15 years, but grand total 14 years. I want to get my numbers right. I don't want to outdate myself. But nevertheless, the thing that you have to understand is a purpose is about exposure. It's about development. It's about growth. And then hopefully get opportunity to earn a scholarship, to go to an institution that you don't have to pay for out of pocket. And sometimes even, and we'll discuss this a little bit later on, sometimes the best laid plans actually go sideways. And so that was the ultimate purpose behind travel basketball. Now, some of the things that come along with it is the ability to, you know, not only just exposure, but a lot of times this is the only way a lot of these young men and women have an opportunity to leave their home city or their home state. And so AAU is a chance to kind of open the world up to the eyes of many different people. And so that's the value, you know what I mean, of AAU basketball or travel basketball. The role of the coaches then said for AAU basketball, it should be to seek not only just growth, but then more important, when I mean growth, I mean increasing their skill set, increasing the opportunity for them to play ball and just become better, well-rounded basketball players. But then also their responsibility is to teach life lessons on a day in and day out basis. And that could be teaching them how to use the game and what it means, like being able to work with a cross-functional team or being able to, you know, sacrifice yourself for the greater good and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the hot topic things people say, you know, when they interview them for jobs. But ultimately what it comes down to is you're providing an experience that this young man or woman may not have gotten on their own. And so we can never lose that thought process or the true meaning behind of what we do. And I will never forget one of the coaches that were on my coaching staff always said to me, Carlos, why are we doing this? If you're not able or if you're not prepared to answer the why question, then don't do it. And a lot of times I see people doing things, not only in the basketball world, not only when it comes to you know, recruiting, but I see people do a lot, do the same thing just in their everyday lives, even running their businesses or them having the ability to grow in the different realms or different areas in which they think they need growth in. A lot of times it's a lot of time wasting, right? But nevertheless, the value of choosing the correct coach and the correct program when it comes to travel basketball is no different than the value of choosing the right institution in which you go to college. And that is, you got to get it right, because if that coach or that program doesn't understand the essence of the purpose of travel basketball, then you're being used. If they don't tell you the purpose of travel basketball, and parents, if any parents listen to me, you got kids, or if you got a nephew or niece that's playing ball or what have you, granddaughter, grandson, you know, you need to make sure you know the purpose behind everything that they're doing. And certain tournaments and certain locations are there for a reason, to garner exposure, to garner growth, to put these young men and women in position so they possibly do not have to pay for college, right? And a lot of times, so many selfish adults mess up a lot of things, especially with children. And I see it on a day in and day out basis. And this is, again, I can talk about this all day. But we cannot forget the purpose of whatever we do, but especially when it comes to recruiting. You know, the greatest thing is you get an opportunity to get back out there on the road. You get a chance to go out there, just be around different people, then be around a lot of your competitors and or you know, a lot of your colleagues out there on the recruiting trails as well. I think that's one of the funnest things is competition. And so we're all recruiting the same person. You know, I beg people to ask me questions about recruiting, because it's so much information that needs to be had and needs to be talked about. Right. You know, last week on our show, we talked about there's not a lot of people that look like us in the room, you know, that making a lot of these decisions as GMs and as owners of professional teams. But that's the same thing in higher education, too. It's not a lot of the same people making these decisions. Right. And so with that being said, that kind of almost, you know, you have to really understand that if there's no one that if there's no representation, if there's not ability for everyone to come on to meet on the same accord, not like-minded experiences, not understanding where your background comes from, how can you ever expect anyone to empathize? You know, when we came up we grew up playing AAU basketball, you can look into the parking lot and you will see at least 12 to 20 to 30 12 passenger vans. Easy. And now you look at it and it's more, you know, luxury SUVs and et cetera, et cetera. And I don't think anything's wrong with that. But what I will tell you is the camaraderie, the people skills, the empathy, those overall soft skills that you want this generation to develop comes about being around each other from people with different background, live in a different city or live on a different side of a city. So you could come together and then you may all be different, but at least you're showing them how to empathize and relate to people that may be different than you. And I think we missed that part of that team bonding, of that experience for the athletes. But then also on the other side of that, what we miss and what you begin to see is everything is so individualized. I only ride to the game with my mom and my dad. I only interact or I only, you know, stay in a hotel with my mom or my dad or the guard or whatever guardian you may have. And so that also takes a little bit away from the whole processes of growth. See, AAU, if done correctly, is a precursor to what they will experience in college. It's an easy precursor. It's an easy way of like, hey, listen, this is what you need to be prepared for. Yeah, okay, we got a 9 a.m. game on Saturday morning. And you need to make sure you're in the bed and you sleep with enough time, because when you get woke up in the morning at 6:30 or at 7 o'clock, so you can eat so people can get over to the gym, you know, it's just no different than when you kind of do in college. The things that you are experiencing in college, you get a firsthand experience right now playing travel basketball. And it's not just travel basketball too. It's travel soccer. It's travel hockey, you know, baseball, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many different sports. But I just want people to understand the purpose behind it, because a lot of times we do things for monetary reasons. We do things for exposure, or we do things to be exposed, but we don't lock in to all the work it takes to go into it. And so we miss the overall purpose. We miss the reason why we choose to do these things day in and day out. And yeah, they'll be stressful, but it's something that we always do to try to sacrifice to make sure that we are gaining and we are actually changing the makeup of the room, per se. But with that being said, it leads us to the next conversation. Now, even though we are going to talk about a topic that could seem kind of contentious, it actually is a microcosm of what we view on a day in and day out basis in our governmental system. So, story came out about last week. About last week, that the Morehouse debate team decided to leave a national tournament because they were being mocked, an anti-Black mockery. Now, let me give you a little bit of backstory. Myself, I was a college athlete, but then also I was a college debater at Wayne State, and I debated a policy debate. And so with that being said, policy debate is very unique, right? And then we did American policy and Morehouse and other schools at this tournament were doing British policy, British parliamentary. And so the debate community is a unique community within itself. The debate community is an intellectual battle of not only just how smart you are, but then also how persuasive you are, but then also how can you almost, in a sense, manipulate or I'll use the debate term, impact term, someone's argument, right? And so what happens is you have to be all on the same playing field to really accomplish the goals that you all set out, right? And so is there a lot of representation there? It's not as much as you want, but nevertheless, debate is such a great tool to have. And yes, I'm used to being probably one of the only Black guys in the room, but on our debate team at that point in time during our years there, we had three of us brothers. And then we had also some of our brown brothers a part of the team as well. And so all that to say this, give you a little bit of backstory of myself when it comes to debate, but then also we kind of get into the culture side of it, but then understand what's happening. So essentially Morehouse decided to leave because they're being mocked in between their rounds, right? And in between their rounds, because of them being mocked, they felt as though that the disrespect took it to a whole nother level. And they asked for the powers that be there to kind of address the issue before the next round, and it never occurred, right? And if you want to look for this story, it's on the Undisputed website. And again, that title of that article is Morehouse Leaves Debate Tournament Following Anti-Black Mockery. So with that being said, so then you have rounds, it's just different rounds. You have to compete against against the opposite team. So it's normally, you have a affirmative side, you have a negative side, right? And so for the given topic, and I'm trying to brush through this as much as I can because I really want to paint the whole picture. So normally when you're at a debate tournament, what happens is, let me back up. Most of the debaters actually turn out to be either lawyers, politicians, debate coaches, lobbyists, whatever it may seem like, when it comes to understanding like the importance. I got a team that actually that was on debate team. He's actually a doctor. Two guys that actually turned to be doctors. So, but nevertheless, normal that in the normal circumstances, those are some of the professions people choose because of the detail oriented you have to be successful. What it means to earn understanding, dissecting different arguments, and then last but not least, how not only just to be persuasive, but then also you're pretty much trying to lobby that judge to give you points. And so in this instance, there was institutions that made racial remarks or tried to be marginalized the experience of those lived experiences of those marginalized debaters. And so with that being said, what ended up happening was that they took it to a level in which they went too far with it, essentially. And so Morehouse asked for the powers to be to kind of address the issue. It never got addressed. And so then they just moved on. And they decided to withdraw from that. But ultimately in the story, what I really wanted to get to is that a lot of these people, a lot of the issues that they spoke about that happened to them. Has it happened to me before? Am I debate partners? Hell yeah. Yes. Yes, it has. But at the same time, are you able to persevere and overcome it? And that answer is like, also, hell yeah. The point is that we shouldn't have to, because we overcome so much already just to be able to sit in the room, right? And so speaking of the conversation we had last week, when we talk about representation matters, that's what we're getting to. So then ultimately nothing occurs, right? They didn't happen. So they withdrew along with Vanderbilt, Clemson, and Spelman College. So they leave from the tournament and they, you know, everything was being discussed and people were like, well, what happened? But essentially the thing that kind of takes me back, one of the statements that was made to one of the debaters is that Black people are not capable of attending four-year institutions. Still today, this didn't happen in the 60s, 70s, didn't happen in the 90s. This is happening today. Now, that's why I started off by saying this situation is a microcosm of not only just our government, but then our society as a whole today. And so then it leads on to say this, and this is one of the best quotes from Mr. Brown, Mr. Robert Brown, who was the debate coach at Spelman. And the statement was this. Quote, Black people face, it speaks to a larger problem that Black people face when navigating white spaces, navigating white spaces. And so essentially what I'm saying to you all is this, and I'm open for conversation on this, listeners, is that when we talk about academics, when we talk about the power of knowledge, right, and a lot of things that Carter G. Woodson has preached about, is that you have to understand that even in education, if there's no representation, then it's still a plantation. Understand what I just said. In this context, if there's no representation, then it's still a plantation. Knowledge, education is still a plantation. And the reason why this is so important is because, like I said, most of these jobs that these individuals normally take are either in higher education, in politics, or in legal. Think about that. So in this point in time, if these things are happening right now in college during a debate, why do you think that everything is so tough when it comes to us making decisions, when it comes to us passing laws and legislation, when it comes to some of the laws that are on the book? So it doesn't just stop and end at the during these debates. And so listen, we'll come back. When we come back, I want to talk more about this, and then we kind of move forward to some of the plans and things that I kind of really want to drop some of this game off on you listeners. But more importantly, we have to understand that these spaces have to be dominated and we have to walk through those doors. I am Carlos McMath. This is the Next Play Show. We're going to go on break and we'll be right back. Later. Listen, peace and blessings to you all. We're back here. This is the Next Play Show. I'm your host, Carlos McMath. Our co-host, Mr. Lamar Woodley, is out tonight. So I'm doing the solo dolo. You feel me? But with that being said, listen, before we went off on break, we had a great opportunity. I was speaking about the situation with Morehouse Collegiate Debate Team. Unfortunately, I don't know if I want to call it racist acts. I will call them defamatory acts that have racist undertones to them. I'm going to call it what it is. Yes, it was racist. but nevertheless, you know, in that current situation, what happened was the Morehouse debate team decided to leave a debate tournament for the simple fact that they felt as though that they were unduly mocked. They were unduly subjected to unreasonable actions when it came to administration, those leaders that was at that said tournament because of conduct of other debaters there, and nothing had happened. And so, like I was trying to explain last before we went on break, is that majority of these individuals that participate in debate are actually some of our lawmakers or some of our legal representatives, some of our lobbyists and you know, could be some of my teammates became doctors, but a lot of them also still coach and then actually are part of the higher education. So ultimately, you know, the thing that I'm trying to get to is this. Right now, or when people get into Congress, those individuals, or they pass the bar and then they're legal to practice law, or they're judges. A lot of their feelings are not really brand new. Like, there have always been platforms for racism to exist, but then also mocked in the same light. And so what I'm trying to get to, or what I'm saying, is this. People just not taking off. I wouldn't say people are just showing their true colors. They always showing them. It's just the difference is, was it a camera being shown on it, or was it a magnifier being used to dissect their conduct? And so with the conversation that we're having right now, is like what Robert Brown, the debate coach at Spelman, stated. It said it takes a large, it speaks to a larger problem that Black people face when navigating white spaces. White spaces, right? And I know a lot of people kind of cringe when you say that, but you got to understand, when there's a majority, that majority normally speaks up and loud, right? And so I would never forget when I was in law school and I had a great conversation with one of my professors. He said, "Los, listen, you have to be talented, of course, but I'm going to teach you a trick to this game." He said, "You have to learn how to move in a room for the white folks." And essentially, this is what he's saying. He said, there are times in which people will leave you where they found you at, stereotypically. Meaning, when you see me, you see my build, and you see how the way I am, you will say, oh, yeah, he had to play football. And thus, people will leave you in a sports realm, in a football type of a conversation. Now, although I am vast in it, and yes, I did play football, that's not where I'm at, though. That's not where I stop at. I'm so much more. One of the biggest things that we talk about is a African-American or a marginalized person, anybody, essentially, we're not a monolith. Nobody's a monolith. You can be multiple things and still fall short. And so when you get in those rooms or those white spaces, you have to be able to not only articulate, but then advocate for yourself. And those are the AA things. Those are two things. And take note to that, because that's something that we don't teach enough. We don't teach how to advocate for ourselves nor articulate well for our children. And those are things that are huge for us, because there's different vernacular and things that people will use to try to then push it back on you. Right. And so let me give you a little bit of example. I'm in a boardroom, I'm in a board meeting, I'm having these conversations, and you know you've heard something that is a little bit skeptical, right? But everybody's going with it because, you know, you possibly in a room full of yes men and women, and nobody says anything, right? How do you go against that statement? How do you check that person, right? How do you do it? You just do it, just go off the hook, and you, hey, you know, I found it disrespectful. Do you raise your tone? Do you raise your voice? And it's funny because when you get into these rooms and these spaces, it's not what you say that really offends people, is that if you don't use their vernacular. And I'll say this. So when you get into that conversation, someone says something that is disparaging or something that you disagree with. And if you listen, you all probably been in these situations. Some of you may not. The way in which people try to use their words is, hey, I'm going to push back on that comment you just said. Because it's about using the right vernacular. But deep down in your mind, what you're really trying to say is, this is some, and I want to address it because ain't no way I'm finna let this slide. You need to be checked right now. Right? And so the nice thing, I'm going to push back against that notion. I'm going to push back against that research. Right? But that's a nice way of really saying, hey, listen, I don't believe, like Jay-Z said, I don't believe you. We need more people, baby. I need more proof. Where's your research at? So, you know, just being able to, like I said, articulate, advocate, but then also understand that vernacular while you're in that room. And I know we get to a point in which we're tired of seeing white spaces. We're tired of being in a room that is not diverse enough. But, you know, until it does change, like, these are tools and these things that we need to be successful and continue to strive and push through. That's just, it is what it is. So, getting back to the story overall, you know, it is being a former debater, like, am I shocked by it? No, I'm not. Not at all. But at the same time, I do wish things were better, of course. right? And then it kind of goes back to the other thing. So whenever you have somebody that is considered, you know, someone that speaks up for minority issues or marginalized issues, one of the things is that you have to be, you kind of almost, or more people are becoming particular about how the way that occurs. And let me just give you a quote from Strickland, who was actually the debate coach for Morehouse. And it's this. And this is something I've experienced myself. At the end of the day, there are, and these quotes just by saying this, in some rounds, they're being discounted and watching debaters who are non-Black use Black experience as just a point to win a game. As a point to win a game. Okay? And this is a full quote. He says, in 6 years of being discounted in rounds and seeing Black experiences being discounted in rounds and watching debaters who are non-Black use Black experience as just a point to win a game is disheartening. End quote. But that's not just in debate, people. Like I said, this is a microcosm of issues. That's not just in debate. That's in economics. That's in, you know, our democratic society, our capitalist society. You know, that's in our everyday lives. We experience that. Where people say, you know, it's easy for you to steal our culture than it is to respect our minds. And so what I'm saying is, and it's not just on a racial issue, but in everything in totality, what happened is there are people that would take your experiences and then minimize them and use them in a way in which only they can benefit from and say, hey, look, I spoke up for you, but you only spoke up because you knew if I would have got a raise, you knew that if it was positive for me, then you know it was going to be positive for you. I was telling people from Jump Street, you know, before, you know, George Floyd, you know, Eric Gardner, you know, I was telling folks, I said, listen, pay attention to what's happening up there in that pipeline in North Dakota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming. Pay attention to that pipeline. And people kept asking me why? Because when things happen to marginalized people, it's always tested out on other marginalized people. And that is what it is. It is what it is. It is always tested out. So while we were talking about, or we weren't paying attention to the pipeline, we understood that, hey, this transferred where? To the battle of the border. And we worried about battle of the border, and then what was happening? Unarmed, marginalized people were still being killed on a regular basis. And there's always something. Everything is in a loop, right? Everything's in a cycle. Everything's in a cycle. So ultimately, what I'm saying is that, yes, I'm extremely disappointed this happened, but these are things that happened just in this one article, in this one story. Again, it is a microcosm of America. So what happens? You speak up, you walk away, you protest. The event overall got canceled, and they had a really open dialogue about different things that can change in ways in which, I guess, the floor was open up for people to kind of voice their displeasure about the things that was happening, social justice and the different social injustice things, right? But that pressure is always on the marginalized to kind of make that difference. If it wasn't a big deal, if they just would have set in and just took it and then continued to debate, would this have been a bigger issue in moving forward? And as one of the debaters said, listen, we could have kept going on. We think we probably would have won those rounds. And actually possibly could have won the tournament. But at the end of the day, it was bigger things at play here. And let me tell you the sad truth of it all. And it's all a part of our human nature. It is this. When they walk away, those individuals, if anything is done, I'm talking from the perspective of those that were being discriminative. If anything is done, most of the situation is only because they got caught. It ain't because there's genuine remorse. And then people say, well, you know, how can you say that? How can you really articulate and say people can't change? I'm not saying people can't change. I'm not saying people don't grow, right? But what I am saying, and I want to make sure I'm clear when I say this, is that you knew what the climate was before these things happened. And you thought you were protected because of something, right? I'm speaking to the larger issue. Those things were only said, that mockery was only occurred because they felt as though they were insulated and they were protected to make those statements. Again, in politics, you may think some of these politicians are crazy and they can't not be in a right state of mind and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you got to understand, people won't argue for, people won't shore up, people won't run on different topics or run on things that they don't think there's support for. So some of those Congress people, Marjorie Taylor, Green, I believe, your boy Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, like those, they're not doing these things just off happenstance. They're doing it because there is a base for it. There is a base for it. So listen, before a certain president was in office, they said racism was dead. And then it comes out, well, it's not racist, we're advocating for ourselves. And then it became, oh yeah, well, some people are taking off their hoods. No. No, that's not it. What it is that there are spaces that have always been created for people to marginalize, to disenfranchise, to use their bigotry on a regular basis for them to feel insulated. There's always different barriers are set up to allow them to feel comfortable. But as soon as you begin to check or address that area or that environment, that's when the pushback comes. And trust me, you better believe that pushback always comes with money supporting it on the back end. Somebody's always in there supporting. There's somebody financially funding it. Essentially what I'm trying to say, and it just is what it is. But when we push forward, when we want social change, a lot of times it'll be people from the inside that slow it up, because there's opportunities for us, or people, or like-minded people, or people of our skin tone, or even just our ideology, for them to advocate for us, for them to advocate for those individuals that's trying to come into that room and they have a seat at the table. But normally what's happening is that the reason why there's not representation inside of that room is for the simple fact it's an environment, or it's a room where it's insulated for those that have those negative thoughts, that have some of those racial thoughts, those bigotry filled thoughts, to feel secure in those said rooms, right? You know, like you always taught, there's a time and a place for everything. It's a time and a place for, you know, people to be inclusive. And there's a time and a place for people to be a bigot. It just is what it is. And I say this too. At the end of the day, because you are a marginalized person in one aspect, doesn't mean you support other marginalized things or marginalized people. Come on now. At the end of the day, if there are things in order that are set to restrain you, right? You know, let's get to it, okay? We on a Sunday night, you know what I mean? So we're gonna enjoy ourselves, but we also not gonna dodge this conversation. There are many Black folk that are advocates, of course, of Black rights and for marginalized rights overall. But at least, and now I'm throwing a random figure out there, at least 30%, 40% of those people that believe in equal rights and civil rights are possibly some people that actually do not support LGBTQ rights. Both people are marginalized. Both are in a space that looking for allies, looking for support, And in one instance, you support a person's blackness, but then in the second instance, you are a bigot towards their sexuality. And then what happens? What we say, well, good for the goose is good for the gander. But it's not that way. So what we see on a consistent basis is this. Is people are willing to advocate, fight for what is near and dear to them. But they're not willing to advocate and fight for things that they may not have a true understanding about. Now, I'm talking about, for instance, in this example, Black versus LGBTQ, right? But then what happens when there's an African-American that is part of the LGBTQ community that is being marginalized? Do we not speak up for them for their marginalization, or do we just move past it? Because it's, you know, it's frowned upon in the Bible. But yet you're the same person that, you know, desecrate your body, you know, coveting someone else's neighbor, et cetera, et cetera. But no, it was just the sexual orientation thing that gets it. Okay, fine, fine. I get it. All right, I'm going too far. But to be quite honest with you, before we can start telling others what they need to come to and how they need to come around, you better come around too. You better see it from both sides of the spectrum as well. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen on the reverse end either, because it does. It does. You because of your part, because your sexual orientation is what it is, and you may not look like those marginalized people based on race and ethnicity, but you don't support, I don't want to say just Black Lives Matter, but you don't support equal rights for all when it comes to skin tone. It happens. It's both ways. It's both ways. See, one of the things in which in this capitalist system was always going to happen is the division. The division always occurs. Here's the crazy part. You will find people that will say, I want to be united, but I want to be united with the folks that think like me. The United States wasn't predicated or built off all the states having like minds. United States was supposed to be built off everyone coming together. Isn't it strange that the country was built on people that felt exiled, people that felt not included based off, you know, what we were told based off religious reasons? But then now we get here and we get here in today's age and then realize, hey, everything that was happened to me there, I'm now doing and building upon here in this new country. So everything was a lie. I don't want to say everything, but there's majority of the story that we were given doesn't add up. It just is what it is. So, you know, ultimately, what I'm getting to with this conversation is that no microcosm, no small situation does not have its root cause coming back with a more of a macro appeal, right? You hear me talking about just this debate, but not only this situation happened at this tournament, but also what does this speaker, what does it say to these young men? And I believe there's a woman there as well, young lady there as well. The young lady of Spelman and also the man from Morehouse. What happens to them now once they leave out of this room? See, it was higher education. I think a lot of times we forget the purpose of higher education. Without looking at age, gender, or ethnicity, like looking at the purpose behind higher education was for growth, to specialize in an area that you can grow skills and attributes with, right? That's the purpose of higher education. It's simply what people always say, go learn here. Learn and make your mistakes in higher ed. And then it turns out higher ed is probably one of the most exclusive places in the country. Because even if you're granted the opportunity to go to college, even if you are successful while in college, even if that's the case, and you earn your right and you graduate great, there's still a chance of you being an N-word in a suit. You earned your right. You earned your right. You still could have a noose hung from your door. After you earned your right. That's what it gets deep, because even in those spaces in which it's meant for growth, there's still restraints on our mind. There's still shackles on our ability to grow. Still. And so when we're trying to get to the next play, when you're trying to grow, when you're trying to expand your horizons, you better make sure you have the support of those people that truly got your back. And you better understand your purpose, right? And that's what takes us great into the conversation, you know, that I kind of wanted to get into earlier, but we'll start right now. And this is going to be a two-part conversation that we'll finish up next week. But along those same lines, we talk about getting in those rooms. Listen, your plan is as only good as a person who makes it. Just that simple. And what I mean by that, I mean that you have to be in tune with your star player. Shout out to Cat Williams. You got to be in tune with your star player, which is yourself, for you to sit down and write your plan out. And there's a lot of time we're trying to get to our next player. We're trying to grow. We don't write anything out. We just want to move and want to do. You know, sometimes, like my grandma used to always tell me, sometimes you got to take a chill pill, baby. Take a chill pill and then methodically go through your growth, your growth sequence. And so the first thing I tell you all listeners is the first step is that you have to stop allowing people to tax your self-evaluation. Stop allowing people to tax your self-evaluation. And what I mean by that is that there are a lot of people that we turn to for advice and for guidance. And that's great. And we need those things. We need mentors. But sometimes when you're walking this path of self-evaluation, you're the only person that can be honest and real with yourself. You can't let nobody else tax your experiences. You can't let nobody tax your growth. You can't let nobody else tell you where you're not good enough. Excuse me. You cannot allow anyone else to tell you what you're not great at or what you're not good enough at. So essentially, stop letting those people on the outside text your self-evaluation. And so then let's get to it. When you're trying to self-evaluate yourself, right? When you're trying to look in the mirror, you better make sure that plan is close to who you are. So the first thing you do before you even write out your plan, you need to make sure that you be honest with yourself. A lot of times when we get into these predicaments and we want to grow and we are tired at our jobs, and we want to go in a new career, right? Our relationships aren't that well. And so we want to move on to a different relationship, or we want to get out of a relationship. We want to earn more money, right? Whatever you decide to do, when you're trying to get to your next play, the next situation in your life, right? The best thing that you can ever do is evaluate yourself. And more importantly, you got to be honest about your grind. You got to be honest about what you're willing to sacrifice for you to grow during your self-evaluation. You got to be real with yourself. Too many times people lie to themselves hoping that someone can co-sign it so they don't have to really look in the mirror. Oh, I'm a hard worker. Oh, I do this, I do that. No, you don't. You know you don't. You know you don't. But then you got somebody like, yeah, every time I see them, they're doing this, that, and the third. Yeah, because every time you see them is only once or twice a week. What the rest they doing the rest of the time, right? Or if you went to 9 to 5, yeah, I saw them at 10. They was doing their work. I can't tell you what they did until I saw them again at three, but they was working at three and they was working at 10. Well, what's happening in the middle? That time in the middle is on you. That time in the middle is where you have to grow and then push yourself. Like coaches in basketball always say, hey, listen, what are you doing when our back is turned for you to be great and for you to grow? There's always room for improvement. What are you doing? And so essentially what I'm saying is you got to be honest with yourself during your self-evaluation. Don't lie. You know, sometimes I tell people, for yourself, you need to do a SWOT analysis for yourself. Strength, weakness, opportunity, right? Like you really have to do your own SWOT analysis. And then come back. And then look up and see, okay, how can I get better at these areas? Not only just when you get into your next play, if you're talking about business, but really just in your own life. And that's important because the next point is this. You are your own incorporation. You are your own business. Like Sean Carter said, hey, I'm a business man. You are your own entity. You have to conduct yourself like that. A lot of you all wouldn't even buy stock in yourself. But yeah, you want somebody to participate in your business. You want somebody to invest in you for you to, you know, earn a degree. Or you want somebody to lean you somebody. Like you have to first be honest with yourself and see what's going on with your own corporation, with your self-evaluation, with your self-growth. So what is your own business plan? The reason why I say that, because your shortcomings as a person can always be viewed and seen through your business, through your works, period. Let me say that again. And this isn't just on business tip. This isn't just, you know, on academics or what have you. It's everything. It's your entire life. Whatever you are trying to do, who you are at your core always comes out. Always comes out. If you pay bill, listen, if you pay this bill late, you know, in your personal life, you're probably going to pay this bill late in your professional life. And people say, no, that doesn't happen. I tell you what, 7 out of 10 times it does. 7 out of 10 times it probably does. And listen, I'm not speaking because it doesn't happen to myself. It's the same thing for me. I look in the mirror every day and try to get better by being honest with myself. My health issues is nobody else fought but myself. So I have to get better at it. You want a great relationship? You have to get better at it because you have to invest in it and be honest with it. And you got, again, I can't say that enough. Be honest with yourself. Because a lot of times we beat ourselves up anyway, but we only do it in a moment. But if we were really being honest with ourselves, we'd have already caught these things, caught some of our shortcomings, and still begin to build from them. We've already done it. And the reason why we don't do it on a consistent basis, because we're really not trying to face the facts that maybe, just maybe, I'm not as perfect or I'm not as clean in some of these instances that kind of go sideways. So please, you know, point one we get to today is stop allowing people on the outside to tax you from your self-evaluation. Because people can always tell you what they think of you, you know, and sometimes they'll sugarcoat it. But even the people that's your harshest on you, your parents, your loved ones, you know, your homegirl, your boys, like, yeah, they're going to be real with you, but they always holding something back. If they care about you enough, they holding a little bit of something back. Because they can say a couple things or really put that dagger in you, but they don't want to do it because they probably know your character, and or they don't want you to put that final, you know, that final stab in their back or that final twist in their, you know, in that coffin when they doing something wrong. So they kind of hold back on you. Everybody wants truth. Everybody wants everybody to keep it real until that realness, right, impacts how the way they look at themselves. So when you evaluate, man, be honest. Be honest about how much grind you got left in you. Be honest about what you're trying to accomplish. Make sure that you have the time to make sure you get it done. And just realize you are your own business. So if I'm asking you to write a business plan out, right? And I am. You have to write your business plan out. That business plan is first you. You are your own corporation. Let's take care of yourself first. What all do you need help with? How are you trying to grow and build yourself? What are your shortcomings? What do I need to do more? What do I need to do less? Do I got a shopping problem? Right? Am I addicted to drugs? Do I have a drinking problem? You got to see every time you begin these lists and you list about how hard you work and how I want to, you know, what's those things called? I talked about it a while ago. I cannot remember the name. Visionary boards. See, everybody got a visionary board. What about those actual boards? What about those actual boards? I don't think you can't have both. I think you can. But see, that actual board, though, you probably want to write that down. You probably don't want to put that in pictures. You know why? Because that image sticks in your head for a long time. And that's a reminder that I don't think a lot of people want to have. So write it down. Write down your plan. Write down your plan to get to the next play. Write down your plan for growth. You know, like people say, put a time limit on it, right? I'm going to tell you this. It's great to put a time limit on it. But you got to be real with yourself. If your grind ain't like that, your sacrifice ain't like that, you better make sure that plan is taken out for a while. Take it out a little bit longer, not just 5 years. You better take it out a little bit longer. Not just this week or next week. Take it out a little bit longer. People always say, oh, yeah, I'm going to clean the house up. I'm going to do this, that, and that. Okay. Like myself, I'm going to get up there and get them gutters, man. I ain't touched them yet. So, listen, we'll finish this conversation. The goal was always to have this a two-part conversation. You know, kind of got along with us talking about the Morehouse situation, but, you know, it's needed. It's needed. But, hey, listen. I'm Carlos McMath. I'm your host. You can find me at Coach Los McMath, Coach C McMath on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Carlos McMath, full name. You can follow us at Next Play Consultant LLC on Twitter as well as Facebook. And then as well as you can follow us on Next Play Podcast on SoundCloud. And this upcoming week, we are dropping a lot of content. So be on the lookout for those things. Most importantly, you know, I would say this. When you're trying to get to the next play, you better make sure you're internally motivated. And that's what we want to accomplish to get done here on the Next Play Show here on 9:10 a.m. Superstation. So we'll be back next week from 6 to 7 p.m. Again, like I said, I am your host, Carlos McMath. Hopefully next week we have Lamar Woodley back. And like we always say, everybody catch the plays, get to the next play. All right. Peace and blessings. We out.